offering my most prayerful, my most humble and grateful pranams at the feet of my dearest and most beloved Sadhguru, Bhagawan Sri Satya Sai Baba. I stand in this august gathering of devotees, very humble, very privileged, very happy, very excited to share the greatest thing that ever happened in my life, Bhagawan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Before I begin, Karthik, my car is parked in an unauthorized zone. And I promise, the moment I get out of here, I'll move it before I get announced. I had to drop a couple of older people here and then I realized I was getting delayed. So I left it there. I knew there was something wrong. Also, when Karthik introduced himself to me, usually people say, "Hi, I'm the MC. It's going to be a pleasure introducing you." Karthik said, "Hi, I'm the MC. I'm going to give you a 10-minute and a 5-minute warning." I said, "Good." So here I am to share with you stories, lessons, more importantly, the life lessons that we learned at the feet of Bhagawan. And I think we are at a point where we use these gatherings, these satsangs, these retreats, whether we meet at a 3-hour satsang in somebody's basement, whether we meet on a weekly satsang at a center formally, or we meet at a retreat at a regional level when we meet more people. I think the fundamental question that we need to ask ourselves, and I've got 2 or 3 sessions with you all, and I want to set the base as I feel guided as I stand here before you. The fundamental questions we need to ask ourselves is, why are we here? Why are we all taking time off from our busy schedule? I don't know, each one of us have commitments, family commitments, societal commitments, children have to go to school, there's a lot of things there, and put everything on hold and we are here. The question is why? We need to ask ourselves. I ask myself every time, why am I at a retreat? Because what I've seen so far, and especially as Brother Jeff said, since Swami Samadhi, a different shift in consciousness is taking place among all of us Sai devotees. I think Swami is beginning to manifest himself within us and guiding us from within and allowing us to be his instruments from within. And I think we, each one of us, with no exceptions in his aura of his love, need to open ourselves to that awareness, to that opportunity that here I am with the greatest opportunity of being used as instrument in Swami's mission. And therefore I ask myself and I ask everyone, why are we here? Why are we here at a retreat? Are we here because it's nice to meet people? Are we here because it's the cheapest way to spend a long weekend? Are we here for social networking? Are we here just to say, oh, we have just been there for 10 years, I might as well add 2 more years, and you just made it an event in your calendar? And that's my concern, that's my fear. Is just like every festival has become an event in the calendar, are we making Swami an event in the calendar? Always Samadhi has to be done. Samadhi occasion has to be celebrated. Who's the guest speaker? What are the bhajans? What's the menu? The retreat, who's the guest speaker? What's the logistics? What's the menu? So we get so involved in organizing sometimes, and I'm saying we all do this. But this is the kind of satsang where we need to re-examine these basic concepts. Where are we making it just another event, or are we here to truly recharge ourselves, to re-introspect where we are in the spiritual journey with Sai? Or are we here just to have a good time? And all of this is okay. I am just throwing this open, so we all examine why are we here. And Swami would constantly remind us in Puttaparthi, why are you here? Ask yourself, why are you here with Swami? Why are you here in Prashant Nilayam? And he kept on dinning at us. Are you here just for a degree? If so, that's fine. Take the degree and move on. If you are here for something more, then think about it. Use that time. Use that time to your fullest benefit. And when Brother Jeff was saying and introducing all these people who work so hard to make a program like this together, satsang together, I think it is for this very purpose that you and I can sit in comfort here with no thoughts about what to eat because that will be made ready, with no thoughts about where to sleep and how to, because that is already made ready, all the basic necessities are in place. So here you are given an opportunity not to go back and say, oh, I wish there was a little more salt in the food, or I wish there was a little more hot water, or I wish there was an extra blanket for me. All that is a little ups and downs, which is part of life anyway. But we are here that there is a whole group of people making all that available so that you and I can take time and go back to the very depths of our spirit. Go back to that lotus feet of Swami. Sit at His feet. Invite Him into our midst. And examine our heart and find out what is my role in this lifetime of mine. As Baba would say, Jantu Naam Narajanma Durlabam. Among all the species and all the dimensions and all the planets. And this he is only voicing the Vedanta, the Sanatana Dharma. The rishis of the yore, the yogis of the yore, who knew everything about the cosmos. It wasn't that they didn't know whether there was life existing in other planets and other dimensions. They knew about all of that. And yet they said, the human life is the most precious among all. And they said even the devas would have to be born as human. They strive to be born as human because in the human life lies that precious opportunity to experience spiritual evolution, to experience nearness, dearness, and oneness with God. And so with having been given this one lifetime that we all have, and also having the greatest privilege of being allowed to, by Him, to be in His aura of divinity and love, how do we use our lives? What do we do with our lives to make it worthwhile? So when the time comes and the last breath leaves you, you go with a happy heart, with a conscience completely clear that you have done your best. Why am I saying this? You know, when I was preparing for a retreat, somebody said, oh, you have to show all your pictures with Swami. We'll get a slide projector and we bring a laptop and devotees will like it. And I remember one, and I said, no, I don't do that because those are my personal, I can get my wedding pictures and put there. I can get all my picnics that I had with my family and put it there. Why don't I do all that? I'm reminded of one little boy, much younger than Karthik. Long time ago, when I was telling him some story, he looked at me and he said two words, and that really put a stop. And that's the two words I'm going to ask all of us, and I ask myself every day. I told him my stories of Swami, and he sat there because his parents had listened to Uncle, he's going to tell you nice stories, and they left me. I was the babysitter for that boy. And I thought I'll entertain him with some stories of Swami. And I said, and he looked at me and he said, okay, so what? Oh, you know, I got this ring from Baba. Oh, okay, so what? So what? We can pat ourselves on the back and say, I have been coming to this retreat for 15 years. Not a single time have I missed. From morning to night, I have come here and done seva. I have done this, I have done that. And this little boy will say, so what? I can say, I had this chances with Swami. I have these many pictures with Swami. I have a locket from Swami. I have a ring from Swami. I have a watch from Swami. Swami performed my wedding. Everything, oh, great. And he'll say, so what? We are now at the crossroad where the next generation was not seeing Swami, the younger children. And among us, many of us who have not seen Swami physically, who have not had the chance to experience physical proximity with Swami, or the fact of even having a darshan, though he has allowed us to take his pictures and videos, they are looking up and saying, so what? So what, you had all these chances with Swami, so what? And the ball comes back into our court. What have we done? What do we plan to do? How do we show our children that Swami has truly influenced my life? How do we show that transformation starts from here? So that they don't say, so what? They will look up to you as a role model. People come to me and say, but these days the youngsters don't come to the Sai Center at all. They are not interested in Swami's bhajan. They are not in, how do we bring them? This is the problem. They're looking up and saying, so what? Having been in Swami's fold for 20 years, how are you different from somebody else who has not known Swami? Have I shown that difference? Have I shown that maturity that Swami wants me to show? Or have I even imbibed that in my thought, word and deed? That my thought, my words and my deeds reflect the Sai within. That inspires my child. And he doesn't say, so what? He'll say, how? How, Dad? How do you do this? How do you say so inspired? How can I be like you? And when that question comes into the youngsters, into children, they want to follow simply because they have seen the elders benefiting in every possible way. They've seen them successful in the society, they've seen them calm, they see them loving. Every single value, satya, dharma, shanti, prema, and ahimsa, if it reflects through our thought, word, and deed, and that is all we need to do as Swami's devotees. We really don't have to go and become a monk. He never asked us to do that. He said, be in the society, be like a lotus in the water, in the slush, and yet be unaffected by it. Can we do this? You know, we were all sitting at Swami's feet one, and I think it was the 60th birthday celebrations prior to that, the year prior to that. Swami was whitewashing the entire ashram. And he was whitewashing means, you know, getting repainted. The whole ashram and the hospital, I just want to make sure, I don't know if there's a new term here. I didn't want to say something else. Because I remember when I was new to the US, I went to a shop and I said, I want a torch. And that guy looked at me, why do you want a torch? I said, no, when the lights go out, I don't want to light up a torch. And he said, wait a minute. Thankfully, he didn't call 911. I found there was something wrong. I pointed to what looked like a flashlight. And so that's a flashlight. So, you know, sometimes when I say whitewashing, I don't want to send some wrong word somewhere. So Swami was repainting the hostel, the college and everything. And so he said, everybody has to go home. Everybody. I don't want anybody staying back. So some of us seniors had always chose this opportunity to stay back and get more opportunities with Swami. And Swami would prepare us for the next semester and so on and so forth. But at that point, there were about 15-20 of us left, and Swami called us inside. And he was so adamant. Sometimes when Swami means business, you just can't get out of it. Sometimes he'll test you, go, 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 and then you say, okay, Swami, I'm taking namaskar. I say, go means you're going. So you never know. But this time he was serious. So he called us. He, in fact, took out an envelope and put two 200 rupee notes in each of our pocket. And he said, now you have to buy tickets and you have to go. Now once you have the money and you can't say, I can't go, right? So we all, reluctantly agreed to Swami and said, okay, Swami. And then Swami sat down in the chair, happy that we all agreed to go. So that part is over. Then he said, Anduru illipoi em chestaru? What are you going to go home and do? So he asked one by, what will you do when you go home? So he says, Swami, I will go sing bhajans. He was a bhajan singer. So he said, I'll go and sing bhajan. Oh, bhajan padtava, manchidi. What will you go and do, sir? So Swami, I'll go and speak. Oh, matlaadtava, manchidi. Ye matlaadtava, Swami, life here in Puttaparthi. Oh, good, good, good. And he kept asking each one, and each one said, I'll do this, I'll do that, either bhajans or talk or whatever. What else can you do, right? Go out and do something. And so Swami was very patiently listening to each one of us. And then he sat down and he said, okay, chinna katha chaptunana. I'll tell you a small story. And I think that story is so pertinent to every one of us. He said, and he used these two villages as an example there. The one village name is Buddha. Bukkapatnam and Kodacheru. I'll just use these two names. So Swami said from Bukkapatnam, a group of villagers went to Kodacheru. These are villages near Puttaparthi. So he said from this village, Bukkapatnam, a group of villagers went to Kodacheru. For what? For Burrakatha. They wanted to see a Burrakatha. A team had come to perform Burrakatha. Now what is Burrakatha? That in the days before television came everywhere and before smartphones have come now, television seems out of context also nowadays. It's strange. But anyway, so before the televisions came, there was a group of these entertainers who would go to different villages and perform. And they will reenact Rama's story, Krishna's story in the form of song and dialogues and things like that. And in fact, if some of my alumni might remember, in Puttaparthi also Swami called some of these people. So there will be one guy, he'll change the crown, he'll become Ravana. He'll go behind the screen, change the crown, he'll become Rama again. So it is very funny to see, but Swami would enjoy it. Sit and, because they will sing long verses and have long, really long dialogues. And so Swami said, these villagers went to that village to witness this Burrakatha. Then when they were returning, Baba said, when they were returning, it was very dark. Amma was saying, it was very dark. They couldn't see their way back to the village. So as they were discussing whether to go this way or that way, they heard some dogs or so barking. Half the people in the crowd said, those are dogs barking, they are from our village. So let us go that direction. The other half said, wait. I can see, hear some howling also. How do you know they are not foxes? Nakkalu, Swami said. I think Nakkalu means fox. So he said, how do you know they are not foxes? So hearing this sound, there was confusion in that group, Baba said. And there was more confusion. Then they saw at a distance a street lamp. They went towards the lamp. And under the lamp, they saw two roads. And they know which road to take to the village. Swami paused and looked at us and he said, what did the street lamp do? It really didn't do anything. It was just there, right? So we just looked at Swami. Swami said, did the street lamp sing bhajans? No, Swami. Did the street lamp give speeches? Itla pondi chepinda? Nothing. The street lamp did what it's meant to do. It showed light. And in that light, people saw their way. He said, I don't want you to be street dogs. I want you to be street lamps. Let your lives be my message. What a powerful story. What a powerful story. Let your lives be my message. In other words, you live your life completely with values, integrated, or whatever you think, in whatever capacity you think, in whatever way you and I understand Swami's message, incorporate that and live it. And let your life be the light that will guide people. Your own children will see in that light. You don't have to tell them, do this and do that. They will themselves find the path watching you. A friend of mine once said, my son doesn't know to play the harmonium at all. I sent him to so many classes. I sent him to these keyboard schools and classes, but nothing is working. I don't think music in his blood. I said, how old is he? He said, 5 years old. You know him. He's so I said, okay, he's 5 years old, but that's a great time to learn. He said, yeah, we tried our best, you know. Nothing is working, so we gave up. It's not in his interest. I said, what did you do? No, I said, we drop him off in the music class every day. We go pick him up. Then every time we insist that he has to practice. So night when we are watching TV, we'll send him to his room, make him practice. I said, you listen to what you're saying. This poor kid is thinking that is a punishment for him. His only chance to spend time with his parents. Parents are watching TV. And he's sent to a room alone, say, go practice your song. So he's doing do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, papa, I'm bored. Because he wants to come back. He wants attention. It doesn't work like that. If we drop off our kids at SSEs and go shopping and come back and say, aim nechkuna, oh mantra nechkuna, very good, come. That kid will learn mantra and that's all, nothing more than mantra. Because what you're doing is using SSE as a baby care, daycare center, right? And so the real transformation doesn't occur. cannot occur. It is impossible. Other than learning a few slokas and knowing that Sarva Dharma means five religions, knowing five values, everything is memorized, very good. But beyond that, what Baba is looking for, what Swami is looking for, what he has taught us, is a true transformation. Every student here can vouch, Sai student who's here, the alumni can vouch with me when I say, the real transformation happened when we saw Swami in action. Yes, his words had a great impact. Yes, his discourses had a great impact. There is no doubt about that. But what truly inspired us, what truly made us take that step towards making that inward change, what truly caused us to introspect and ask ourselves some very basic questions of what is my aim in life, what is my objective in life, is because we saw him in action, day in and day out. Somebody asked me very recently, as recent as last weekend, so what is one, if you want to explain Swami's teaching for your life in one word, what is the one word you can give, comes out of your heart? I said the one word is give. Give. Because that is what I saw Swami doing. Give. He only focused on giving. How many of us go to a temple to give? We go to get something. We come to a retreat to get recharged. We go to Swami to get his grace, to earn something. It's always getting, 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 getting. How many of us get up in the morning and think, what am I going to give today? That's what he did. That is what he did. He gave. And Swami said, I started giving when I had nothing in my hand. Even today, I have nothing in my hand. But in this, nothing is everything. Not because, now when I say this, it's very tempting, and I bear with me. Bear with me, because it's very tempting to say, oh, he is avatar, he is God, he can do something, and saying that we create such a long, big distance between us and Swami. He said, if I wanted to do that, I would have come with four arms, you would have put me in a museum and charged fees for my darshan. But I came like you, two hands like you, two feet like you, singing like you, talking like you, so that you can use me as a role model. It is not blasphemy to think, if Swami can do it, why can't I? That is exactly, to me, his mission. Why would God take birth as a human being? Why? Couldn't he fix issues from there? He is giving us an opportunity. For everything that you and I do, we need a sample, we need a prototype, we need a role model. He is the best role model in every aspect of our life. And he said what you can do being aware that you're divine. With that divine consciousness, what can you do in one life? Watch his life. In one lifespan of 85 plus years, he touched hundreds and millions of lives. This is not a popularity context. There are other people who are popular. He was not just popular. The fact that you and I, sitting thousands of miles away, 8 years after his physically passing away, sitting here, still ready to shed tears of joy and devotion, is that was the impact. He went straight into the depths of our very soul and touched our heart. That was the impact of one person, one person. Swami would say often, okkati chikite chalu, okkati, I want one devotee, I'm happy. Because he would tell us, there was only one Vivekananda. There was only one Shankaracharya. There is only one. Because in hostel you say, Indigo group, group, anta group. Why are you forming groups? You make up your mind. You become a leader. So each one of us, I think Swami instills that. He exploited that potential. You are a devotee. You love me. Then go within and ask what you can do for me. And that's enough. You don't look for X and Y to support you. We don't need that. And the organization is a platform that Baba has given us. The organization is a platform where you want to, somebody says, you know, I just feel like singing bhajans. That door is open. Come sing with all your heart. Well, by the way, when I sing with all your heart, I remember of this funny incident. When I started singing bhajans, I could never start on a shruti, on a scale. I didn't know what it was. Poor brother, T.V. Hariyar, most of you know him. He was breaking his head with me. He still remembers. Sundar, onroda na evlo thindadi again. I'll be terrified, and Swami just came to a hostel and 12 of us said we want to sing. Some of them are very good singers. And I raised my hand. I just wanted every chance to get closer to him, to know him. And so he said, okay, all 12 sing, but practice. Now, I had no clue how to start. So I would always struggle. And many times I would start off key and all that stuff. So I had gone through that learning. But I'm saying that because when I say sing from your heart, you might say, aha, Brother Sundar said I can sing from the heart. I don't have to follow scale. So there is a story here. Okay. So just before you make up that mind and let me break that bubble right away. So Swami once gave a discourse saying God wants you to sing from your heart. He doesn't care for ragam, talam and all. He wants only bhava. So sing from my bhava and sing from my heart. God is pleased. Me sitting right there, I was thrilled to hear this. I said, thank God, Swami. Thank God. So Swami somewhere listening to my prayer, I thought, great. And then Swami finished his discourse, came to us, the bhajan boys. He said, how was my talk? We of course said, Swami, you spoke very well. Then he said, listen, that thing I told about ragam, talam and bhavam. Singing from bhavam, manchide, that is for followers. That is for people who follow the bhajan. And then he looked at the boy who plays tabla, he said, you play the tala. He looked at the boy with the harmony, he said, you play the raga, they will get the bhava. And I will sit on the chair and enjoy bhava, raga and tala. So that's why I said, I have to break this bubble because my bubble was just broken right there. So it is a seva, right? When you come here and you sit in front of the mic and you sing, you are offering not what you feel in your heart. That, you know, again, when one boy sang, Aparadha Kshama Karo Sai Prabhu, Anath Bandha Sai Prabhu, after that you don't hear Sai students singing that very often. Very, very rarely they might sing that. This is one of the reasons. In the 80s, if you see, nobody sang after this. Because that boy sang very beautifully, he's an excellent singer. Swami came to him next day, very quietly talking to him. I was sitting next to him and I heard, Swami said, you sang very well. Next time you want to sing this kind of bhajan, you sing in the bathroom. I will hear. You sing from your heart, I will hear. Because you did something wrong, why everybody should ask sorry? Because the bhajan is, please forgive me. So he said, you are feeling guilty, you are singing in the mic, everybody else is asking, please forgive me. Why? Sing Rama Krishna Govinda. Because he said, I sit on the chair, I am seeing castor oil faces everywhere. So make sure everybody sings, think of Swami sitting on the chair and watching, right? So he wants to see everybody joining, clapping. And so when I was listening to this bhajan, I said, Swami was, I felt the energy because this is exactly what Swami wants. It's not here for us to show our talent here. It is for us to engage in that group dynamism, the group energy, the pure energy of the satsang truly, truly draws Swami in our midst. So it is this kind of calling. Suppose you say, yes, I love to sing bhajan, I want to be part of the bhajan. He has opened the door for that into his mansion. Suppose somebody says, you know, this is all emotional, I don't know, I just like to serve Baba. He has opened that door for you. Somebody says all that is good, but Advaita and Jnana Marga is the highest and I want to really get depth into it. He's not only given discourses, but he's opened that door also at the organization through study circles. Come, engage in hearty discussions, engage in that highly intellectual conversations, even if there are two people, doesn't matter. But you've got a platform there. He has opened every single door to get people into his fold. And guess what? All those doors lead to the same banquet table in his mansion. We all meet at the same banquet where he sits at the food and he gives us the divine food of satya, dharma, shanti, prema and ahimsa. It is very simple in one way if you look at it. Just five values we need to incorporate in our lives, in every aspect of our lives. We get up in the morning and say, how am I going to incorporate these values? In whatever we understand today, I will try my best to incorporate. I will give. What can I give to make these values in action? What can I give? From the morning till the night, till he went to bed, he only thought of giving. Only thought of giving. There was no what is in it for me at all. Only thought of giving. And we can all do that. Make giving a habit rather than getting. And Baba would say, when you give, you become a river. The more you give, the more water will flow through you. And giving then becomes your nature. He gave love. He gave peace. He gave contentment. He gave every moment of his waking hours. think of it. I never get tired of telling these stories. So if you've heard it before, bear with me. But this is just like Rama and the story of Rama and story of Krishna. It gives me goosebumps every time I think about it. A 10 feet by 10 feet bedroom, a 10 feet by 12 feet living room, one single chair to sit on, one ceiling fan, pile of letters on one side, and all his entertainment was to read those letters and offer solace and comfort to those who need it. He would meet doctors to find out who is coming to the hospital, what can be given to them, how better can they do. He'll meet the administration people to find out what are the accommodation problems, how are they dealing with it, what is the canteen providing. Why did he open five different restaurants, or not restaurants, the five different canteens in the ashram? Not so you and I can go and indulge. You know, I have this conversation with people. They say, but Baba has opened North Indian, South Indian, Western canteen. So how can you say Baba didn't want us to eat food? That is not the point. He didn't say come here, enjoy food. He said, when the North Indians come here, they come for 1 week. If they eat our kind of food, they will fall sick. They won't have time for darshan and meditation. Give them their food. When the South Indians come, give the South Indians their food. When Westerners come, how will they pour the heat of a spicy food? So open a canteen for them, give them their food. But we go and say, today I will have Western, tomorrow I will have North Indian. It's amazing how we go to a spiritual center and we drag God down to us and then sit and complain about how the food will be. The Western food could be a little more better. Salad, what is there in a salad? Little masala would be good. So Baba says, don't bring God into a picture. This is another thing I struggled with or struggled to understand. And it was so, so clear at times. He said, don't bring God into a picture. Take the picture to God. In other words, when you see the picture of Swami, remember his omnipresence, omnipotence, omniscience, and go beyond the picture. The picture is a platform where you take off. But we bring God into the picture. We bring God into our lives. When he says, I want to take you from the samsara, give you a bird's eye view of what life is actually about, so you are better able to handle your problem. We say, no, 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 you come here and fix my problem. You come and fix my problem. So we stay rooted to what we believe. We stay rooted to our idea of reality, and we drag God into our reality. And that is why we struggle with faith. We struggle with doubts. Swami would say, how can your mind ever understand God? Even Adi Shankara says, who am I to even praise you or worship you when I don't even understand you? He talks about Parashakti and he says, how can I? This cosmic energy is so beyond my mind, because the mind can only relate to things which the senses provided. It is a meeting point for all the senses. Senses are providing information, something is processing and making logical sense out of it. That is all it can do. Anything beyond the senses, like faith. What is faith? The mind gets confused. The ear is not giving faith. The nose doesn't give you faith. The eyes don't give you faith. It's something else. Love, what does it mean? What is divinity? Why are you kneeling down and praying? Why are you looking up? The mind gets confused. And therefore, he said, it is natural for the mind to doubt. Ignore the mind. Because it cannot handle it. Because one boy said, told Swami, how can I be your instrument? How can I set an example for other younger boys when my mind itself is full of doubts? Because he said so many lessons he taught us as if he was preparing us to become lecturers in his college. I say as if because those lessons stay even now. It applies to many of us even now. It applies to all of us because we are all teachers. As parents, we are teachers to our children. As spouses, we teach each other. We are all teachers. And therefore, it's important for us to understand. So this boy said, how can I set an example to my younger brother, Swami? My mind is full of doubt. He said, "Yendu doubt to ignore that mind. The mind will never understand. The more you..." So he said this. Can you... In Telugu, it was a poem he said, but I understood the gist of it. I'm not going to dare repeat that. I don't even remember that. But the gist of the meaning was, can you fit an elephant into a bottle? Can you bring the infinite God into one thought? To understand the infinity, you have to lose the mind, transcend the mind. That is the purpose. That is why he said, that is why surrender comes. And that is what the surrender. Surrender your mind so that the higher energy is opened and you receive God. The perspectives that Swami wanted to share comes from this energy of giving. When you start giving, you realize how much joy it is there. You know, love and happiness is only got by giving it first. You get love, you receive love by giving love. You receive happiness by giving happiness out there. You don't wait for it to happen. One of my friends once said, you know, everywhere I go, Walmart or any other place, I'm just going to be like Karthik, put that Indian accent. When I go to Walmart, somehow these white Americans, they look at us in some weird way. I said, really? What do you mean? I said, no, every time in the counter, they don't even smile at me. I always experience this. So I said, have you tried smiling first? No, why should I smile? Let them smile first. So this is the problem. You go with a surly face, looking whether she's smiling at me or not. That person is going to think, this weird guy, let me get her first. Why is he giving me this weird look? That is the problem. You be the first to smile. You be the first to greet. Why on earth will somebody not greet you back? There could be one odd exception. That could be one in 10,000 people. But almost everybody will return your smile with a smile. Will always return your love for love. And that is the secret of Swami. He started by giving love. He did not point our mistakes to us, because we had so many of them as youngsters. Innumerable mistakes. All letters, half the letters were only confessions. Right? With Swami, what else do you do? Otherwise, you can't sit in front of him for darshan. You might as well confess a letter and give it to him. But he didn't come and point our mistakes. He saw only what is good and encouraged that. So there was no room for these negativities. We're going to have a workshop on how to get rid of negative thinking. Just fill it with positives. Fill it with enough reasons to thank, enough reasons to how can I give. All the little negatives which come from insecurity, fear, greed, anxiety, all of that will slowly vanish. It won't be there. And the best role model in Swami is, how did he start? Did he go to Harvard and get a business degree and said, let me draw a project plan to save the world? If he had done that, we would still be talking about him. Because you and I, with all that education, we didn't think of that plan. But he didn't do that. He took birth in a remote village that was not even on the map of India. Right? Were his parents rich then? Were they rich landlords? No, they had hardly any money to eat. You know the story. With nothing, he set out to give. When I heard stories of Krishna when I was young, and they would say Krishna was born in a prison, his uncle would come and kill all his cousins before, and then Krishna grew up as a cowherd, and then he became divine, and he was the avatar. And I said, give me a break. How is it possible? I mean, how can a child be open to such tormentation, and how can this child become God? This must be some folklore. As a youngster, I said, no, this can't be true. Then I go to school, St. Xavier's High School in Bombay, Vilepale, and then they talk about Jesus being born in a manger, hidden away from everybody, born up as a son of a carpenter, and he became the son of man. I said, Rari, either be same story. What is this? These things can't be true. I mean, we are poor people, nothing is happening, they still remain poor, they don't become son of man. How can this happen? But when you see Swami, the same history repeats itself. It's almost like the cosmic intelligence is saying, you don't need what you think you need. You don't need all of that. All you need is one thing. Know who you are. That knowledge will change everything else. Your whole perspective, the way you look at creation, will change. So there were two of us sitting at Swami's feet. And these are some very powerful gems of Swami. And they touch my life so much that I never get tired of sharing it. This boy said, for something Swami said, if I can do it, you can also do it. And then this boy said, but Swami, you are God, you can do it, who are we? Kani Swami, meeru devam mem cheyalagaru, or something like that, he said. Swami said, what is this? What is the difference between you and me? And he said, you have two eyes, I also have two eyes. You have two hands, I also have two hands. You have two legs, I also have two feet. You walk, I walk, talking, walking, reading, writing, nuvu chestavu, nenu chestanu. We both do it. Nenu kuda maatladtanu, nenu paadtanu, nuvu kuda maatladtavu, nuvu paadtavu. What is the difference between you and me? Cheppu. What is the difference between you and me? Say, he said. And we both kept quiet. Because at that moment, he is catching us, eye to eye. We really can't pinpoint a finger and say, this is the difference, this is why you are God and we are not. We can't say that because we don't know what is the difference. And then he comes out with this beautiful answer. He says, the difference is here, he said. Chupulo undi, difference. Chupulo means in my perspective. The difference is in the way we see things. think you are a small atom in this magnificent universe. I think the universe is a small atom in me. That is the only difference. That is the only difference. I think this whole universe is a small atom in me. You think you are a small atom. Change your perspective. You can also do everything. Easily said, right? But that is the beauty. That perspective change will change everything. There will be no room for anxiety because there will be no this unity concept. There will be no second to even think of unity because you are the one. You will be the one and all of creation will exist in your consciousness. So all of you in my consciousness, but all of us are in his consciousness. Again, all of us are in his consciousness. Purnamada, Purnamidam, Purnam, Purnamudachyate. That is the beauty and the magnificence of this cosmic creation, which the mind cannot understand because our education does not prepare us for that. They have taught us 2 plus 2 is 4. From 3 you take out 2, 1 will remain. But Vedanta says from 3 you take out 2, this will become 3, that will also be 3. But that's what happens. When a mother gives birth to a child, the child is from the mother, but the child is an independent entity, complete. Right? And the mother still says complete, she doesn't become reduced. So that is the secret of creation. And that, if those are the levels of thinking Swami wants us to rise to, shouldn't we be prepared? Then in that perspective, you will only want to give. You will only want to love. You will only want to serve because there is no other. There is no fear of losing anything. There is no fear of not getting anything. You won't operate from the platform of insecurity or greed or anxiety. You will only think of love. Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema, and Ahimsa. My dear sisters and brothers, these moments where we take time off, come away from this madding society or madding crowd, if you will, or come away from this aggressive lifestyle, come away from our TV shows. Hopefully you don't have some channel app on your phone. But coming away from all that, taking time off, use every moment of this time. It is so enriching. If you go back to your source, go back to your home and say, Swami, give me guidance. Show me the path. And I can tell you from my own experience, there has never been a time where he has not answered my prayer. And I know all of you understand this. When you truly ask for guidance, he is there to guide you in some form, unmistakably will have his signature and you will know this is Swami. This is no one else but Swami guiding me. It was not a chance, it was not by chance I came across this book or this person, but this is an orchestration at a very high level, orchestrated for me to blossom. This is a divine orchestration. You and I are not here in this time and moment and space, not here by chance. We are here by some divine guidance, guiding us to our own spirituality. So in the next 2 or 3 days that we are here, use every moment, talk among yourselves and involve every one of us. We are all on the same page to explore, understand, appreciate this divine principle, Satya Sai Baba, who has come to awaken us to our own divinity. I want to end this. I still have some time? Okay, I do. Okay, thank you. Till what time do I have? 25 minutes. Oh, great. Okay. There was this concept of giving, coming back to this concept of giving. This is so important for us because we always look back and say, oh, only if I had a degree, I could do this. Or only if I had some money in the bank, maybe I could have done this. Maybe if I saved up my money, then I can go and do seva the way Swami wants me to do. Or only if I do this and then I want to do that. So we have these conditions in place. So there's a nice story I came across recently. And it talks about a boy, because this is more like an analogy kind of thing. I don't think this really happened. But nevertheless, the story has a powerful story to it. A powerful moral to it. So this boy comes from a village to the city in India, Bangalore, seeking a job in Microsoft. And his job is to be an office boy, to make coffee and give. So in India, you still have these little boys running around making coffee for senior people. So this boy said, this manager said, okay, make a cup of coffee, let me see if you can make coffee. That boy said, yes sir, he makes a nice real cup of coffee, and like a Coimbatore or Kumbakonam degree coffee, whatever that was. He gives it to him, the manager drinks it, he says, oh good, I'll give you a job. Give me your email, I'll send you some simple paperwork, you sign it. This boy says, sir, I don't have any email. And this manager says, you're coming to work in Microsoft, and you don't have email, go, you don't get a job, go home. So this poor boy is heartbroken. He comes out, he says, what is this? I can't go back to my village. I can't show them my faith. I have to do something. I came with such hopes to join a big company and even start off with an office boy. It doesn't matter. And so he digs into his pocket. He has 20 rupees note. And he says, what do I do with this? He says, okay, let me see. He goes to a vegetable vendor. And like in his village, he says, let me do something. So he goes and buys a kg of tomatoes. And goes to some homes and knocks and says, I have some kg, can you buy, please come buy. And then at the end of the day, he sells these. Somebody takes pity of him and he buys out this kg of tomato. He bought it for 20 rupees, he sells it for 30 rupees. So at the end of the day, he says, oh, I had 20, now I made 30. I'll try this again tomorrow. So the next day he tries, because he had 25 now, 5 rupees he spent for his dinner. So 25 becomes 50, gives him a chance. So one step at a time, slowly he builds this. And in 5 to 6 years' time, as the story unfolds, he has a fleet of vans delivering vegetables and groceries to different homes. A big businessman. And now somebody tells him, you're running a good multi-million business. You better insure all this. You should be insuring them. Don't simply take chances. He says, okay. So he calls the insurance agent. And the insurance agent runs through the policies. He says, tell me where to sign. I will sign it. He says, I cannot sign it, sir. Give me your email. I'll send it to your email address. And this man says, I'm sorry. I don't have email ID with me. And then this insurance agent tells him, what? Sir, without email, you did so much. Imagine if you had email ID, where you would have been? He said, yeah, I know. I would have been an office boy. I would have been an office. So sometimes we think the very things that we need for support may be the ones who are stopping us. Maybe the ones who are actually restraining from breaking forth. The mind becomes so conditioned that we are afraid to break forth and to even believe that you are divine. Baba says, you are divine, but we are refusing to believe because mind is so conditioned in this victim mindset. Who am I? Who am I to say, I am God? No. I am simple. I am humble. That is the ego telling you, brainwashing you into believing that you are weak, you are vulnerable, and you are a victim of circumstances, and somehow the whole cosmos is geared to punish you and test you the rest of your life. But God is saying, you wake up, you are the God you are searching for. And I am only the reflection. That's what Baba says. Who am I? He says, I am the reaction, the reflection, and the resound of your own inner divinity. If that was a reflection and the reaction, then where is the real divinity? Within us. Why can't we go within and search? And this is why Swami said, when I have nothing, I give. He truly had nothing. If you look back, he had no education. He dropped out of school. Not that you should encourage your kids to drop out. But he dropped out of school just to prove a point that you don't need high-end education to achieve some big things in life. He dropped out of... You know, when you think of business and you think of establishing something, the most important thing that the modern business tactics or strategies teach is location, location, location. So Swami took us to this old devotee's house in Madras when we went to PhD. He took 4 of us with him. And then he took us to a devotee's house for lunch. And while we were having lunch, Swami said, tell some of your stories to him. Tell them, tell these boys some of your old stories. So this lady was very kind. And she said some things, many stories she said, but one of them was this beautiful thing. She said, you know how much we have learned from Swami. When Swami was a young boy, he would drive his car and come, wake us up in the middle of the night, said, I'm going to come and spend 1 week with you. I'm going to have satsangs in your house. So they'll say, yo, he's come again. Now our night, our sleep is gone. Again, whole night we'll be doing. So she would say, we'll actually tell Swami 11 o'clock, Swami, we all have to sleep. You also have to sleep. You do tomorrow, you continue your satsang. And so that is how motherly they were with Swami. So in addition to those stories, she said, we used to tell Swami that I know you are a young boy, you want to start this mission of world seva, whatever you want to do. Please come here, set up in Chennai, we have connections in the British government. We will get you land, we will get you property. Who will come searching for you there in the village? If it floods, we can't even cross the river. Who can come searching for you? But Baba would insist, saying, no, that is the place I have to start. And she said, we all thought at that time that Swami was this adamant, egoistic young sannyasi, because he already was very grown. This is assumed. She said, the egoistic young boy will not listen to them. They say, okay, go. You start somewhere, only five or six of us will come. Nobody else will come. But look at what happened today. In the back of the beyond, Swami started in Puttaparthi. Then the place is not, it is not called some beautiful place. Puttaparthi snake house, right? Even the name. So think of branding. Name, he broke the brand. Location, cross. Any management professional said, this is not the way to succeed, and yet look how he succeeded. What is he trying to tell us? In what manner are these lessons for us? Is that there's only one thing that we need for success, not all of this. In fact, all of this could actually be reasons why we are not successful in whatever we want to do. The reason is we have lost our identity. We have lost our identity. Swami would say, know that one thing by which everything else is known. Know that one thing by which everything else is known. He said, how do you think these yogis and sannyasis and the rishis of the yore knew about Jupiter? I mean, if you read Surya Siddhanta, an ancient Sanskrit document, people don't even know the dates of these documents. Okay, so there are experts trying to debate back and forth. But these Sanskrit documents, Surya Siddhanta, for example, it introduces trigonometry, high-level mathematics. They talk of distances between not only Earth and Sun and Earth and Moon, but Earth and Jupiter, the diameter of Saturn, the distance between Earth and Saturn. They knew Saturn was the furthest away from the Sun, so they call it the shadow planet, because beyond that, the Sun's rays don't reach. So they had reasons why they understood this cosmos, and then they understood our connection with each of these planets. And that's how Vedic Jyotish Shastra and all of that were written. We know Vedanta is so advanced in its approach to lifestyle. It's a very empowered lifestyle approach, Vedanta. But we don't teach it, we don't learn it, we don't teach it. It's somehow, unfortunately, that is why Swami says, I've come to revive this ancient principle of Sanatan Dharma. So that you will know that, my God, I'm missing out on life. To understand what is my role in this universe, what is my place in this cosmos, how am I linked to this? And so Swami would say, how did they know all this? How did they know the secrets of the universe? He said, they knew one thing by which all of this was known. And that one thing was, who am I? Who am I? What is this I? If I think I am Sundar, then that Sundar name was given to me by somebody. If I think I'm a Hindu, is that because of my culture and upbringing, I claim myself to be so and so. My habits, my likes and dislikes are all borrowed. Everything is a matter of somebody planted a seed of thought in my mind, and that's the identity I've grown with. But who am I really? What is my purpose of this birth? Why am I even born here? What happens after I die? We don't know the basic tenets of life, and yet we go about trying to become role models or trying to influence everybody. That is why this confusion is. And so let me end with a nice story Swami said. You must have heard the story. Swami said, there was a village of all mad people. Why? Because there was a little well, they would drink this water. The water had some poison in it. So when they would drink it, it would destroy the mental thinking, and they go crazy. So since everybody drew water from the well, the entire village had mad people. They were all laughing, jumping, crazy, whatever, right? And then the village, the king comes, visits that village, and all these people are looking at the king and saying, oh, you poor fellow, look at that mad fellow. How he's sitting like this. He's not jumping and joyfully dancing like us. Look at him. So it was a hot day. Swami said it was a hot day. The king was thirsty. So he got down from the horse and drank the water from the well. And then the entire village rejoicing. Oh, now the king is cured. He is also cured. Swami said, are they pichi? We all are dragging each other into this worldliness. And then we feel, oh, now good. My child is also good. He's also checking out things in Amazon. Good, I'm also going to be good. So we all borrow each other's ideas, we borrow each other's reality, and we have built a convenient reality where we are victims, there are circumstances that are controlling our lives, and somehow we are going to go through life, right? But here comes, that is why the role of Sadhguru is so important. He comes and wakes us up. He says, wait, you are that divine. All this worship and praying you are doing is to awaken the divinity within you. And therefore, my dear sisters and brothers, let us use every moment of this to explore this very depth of spirituality. Don't treat this as, oh, this is all high philosophy and all that. But this is the closest and the dearest message of Swami. Awaken. And with that awakening, go out and serve the world. Don't wait for that to happen at the same time. Because, you know, when again asking us to be role models for the younger boys in the hospital, Swami said, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be perfect, but you don't have to display your faults to everybody. That you know, I know. Let others see you as a role model. You and I will work on that. Let the younger generation see us as a role model. So even if you have anger within you, control it. Let your child not see you as an angry person, because then they will say, so what? When you tell them the story, they're going to say, so what? Let them not see you as anxious. Take that anxiety in your private and sit with Swami and say, help me with this anxiety. Swami, I cannot handle this. But with your child, show them that you're handling it. That is the stage where you are asking God to guide you to being a role model. Swami said, when you do that, I will help you be that role model. And you will truly become what you aspire to become. That is the power of being his devotees. We are first generation devotees. Think of this. Never again in the history of mankind will there be another Satya Sai. There could be Prema Sai and all the other Sais. But you and I experience one avatar in flesh and blood. We have the privilege of saying, I saw an avatar with my eyes. I listened to his voice. I have touched the hem of his robe. You and I have that privilege. The question is, what am I doing with that divine privilege? What am I doing with that treasure? That is a question that you and I need to ask ourselves. Can I use that to inspire my children? Can I use that to uplift my own spiritual awareness and perception? Then you will find that Swami gets closer and closer and closer to you. You will enjoy the proximity and you'll never feel that he has left you and gone away. We all enjoy his proximity, but this is a binding contract, literally. The contract of spiritual relationship is so strong and so binding between you and your Sadhguru. And the more you put his teachings into practice, the more you draw him into your fold. I can begin to tell you, and you can begin to tell me, so many stories each of us can share about this truth. We know it in our hearts. But how do you make that every day, every moment, feeling his presence? And when you feel he is with you, then why fear? Why fear when I am here? Why fear? Why fear when he is holding your hand? So my dear sisters and brothers, let's be strong. We have hard work to do, loads to lift. Shun not the struggle, face it, it's God's gift. Be strong. Be strong. Don't say the days are evil, who's to blame, and fold your hands and keep quiet. Oh shame. Stand up. Speak out bravely in God's name. Be strong. Be strong. It matters not how hard the battle goes, the days, how long. Faint not. Holding Swami's hand, practicing his teachings, believe that tomorrow comes the song. Be strong. Be strong. Sayonara.
Sayonara, if you have any questions for Dr. Sundarayer, we can take some questions now. We have 10 minutes. Anyone has any questions for him?
Sai Ram, dear brother, thank you for sharing your experiences and enlightening us. One question I always ask myself. We all know that our mind is very powerful, extremely powerful. When you think about something, it can put a shape in front of you. Now, on a daily basis, every moment, we all live with Baba. And if we have a question, we need to ask him. We can ask him a question. But how do you know that the answer is from Baba or from your monkey mind?
What a wonderful question. I'm always nervous with this Q&A. But it's a great question. And I say it's a great question because we ask this question to Swami once. Swami, how do we know it's your voice and not our mind's voice? And here again, Swami was very quick with that response, almost without batting an eyelid. So, almost without batting an eyelid, Swami said this, if you are in doubt, it is not my voice. When it is my voice, you will not have a doubt.
Sorry, brother, can you repeat that? I was focusing on something else.
He said, the question was, how do we know it's your voice and not my mind's voice? He said, when you are in doubt, it is not my voice. When it is my voice, you will never have a doubt. That means when his call comes, it is crystal clear. When his message, and all of us, let's not think of this as, oh my God, this is another homework we have to do. No. All of us know there are times you will feel it in your heart that this is Swami. You will know it. I'm not even talking at the level of conscience. I'm talking of even deeper. Nobody can shake that faith. Nobody else can even understand. But you in your heart know, this was Swami telling me something. Right? That is that knowing comes so unshakably real and crystal clear. Those are definitely His voices. And again, as once he said, the depth of, you know, it's only in the depth of silence that the voice of God can be heard. So these voices are not voices the way you and I understand as voices. Because when it speaks, then the silence is gone. So it is that intuitive understanding, the knowing that comes silently, instantaneously, spontaneously, you know in your heart, this was Swami. And that knowing you can't even express to somebody else. Even your closest and nearest ones you can't. So Swami does speak to all of us. And we all know what that voice is. But when we are in doubt, no, he said. When you are in doubt, no, that's not my voice. Because when he calls, you cannot ever refuse that call, that voice. Yes, sir.
Sai Ram, brother Sundar Guruji.
Oh, Guruji.
I mean, the way you express.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's in the modern world, do I take Tylenol or do I take coffee for my headache? In the context of this, do you feel Vibhuti has that healing power all the time that I give it to myself, I give it to my children and say, here, take Vibhuti, this is Swami's Vibhuti, or should I instill faith in them first?
Jen, he's a Sai alumni, by the way. He's an amazing speaker as well. He's got a lot of stories to share. That's what you get for putting me in a spot. I think it works both ways. I think it is faith, because Swami has said unmistakably that it is your faith that cures you. My grace is like sunlight. I don't choose whom to cure, whom not to cure, and whom to bless, whom not to bless. But you open the window, the sunlight comes in. And that window opening is your faith. At the same time, He also gives that little seed so that you can plant that faith. And that seed could be a cure. I remember one boy, very close to me, we were in Puttaparthi. He had a big skin rash, and he had seen Swami creating Vibhuti. It becomes blasphemy when I say this, but bear with me. When you see something like this happening hundreds of times, you say, "Oh, Swami just gave Vibhuti." It is such a big thing, right? But we get used to it. So when his skin rash was identified as a big problem, more like a beginning of leprosy or something, the boy was very depressed. And he said, what will I do? So if our Swami is going to create Vibhuti, I don't know if that will help also. This, because of seeing so often, he didn't know. Swami created Vibhuti and rubbed it on his hand. He said, Nen choose kuttanle, paravaledu. So these are times where faith really didn't matter. But he, with his grace, planted that seed so firmly inside. When the snake bit me, I did not say, "Oh Swami, where's Vibhuti?" I didn't even say, "Swami, help me." I didn't even say, "Sai Ram." I said, "Ouch." And in the hospital, when they said, "Can we put Vibhuti?" I said, "Don't put Vibhuti, please give medicine." Swami giving it doctors giving Vibhuti, I said, "No." But yet what had happened? At that moment there, somehow he had already said, "Adi paamu kaadu, adi mullu," a drama chesina, that drama guy. He's doing, he made it into a drama. So there is an element of his will that gives you that hardcore faith. And once that seed is planted, he wants you to nourish it. In all our cases, I'm sure, there have been some instance, or at least one instance, where it was purely his grace that he planted the seed of faith in us. Baba would say, "I give you the experience so you can have faith. After that, it's up to you to nourish that faith." Then we ask for one more to give faith. He might give you one more. Then we ask one more. He might give you one more. But how long can you be in the kindergarten of asking, "Give me faith, give me faith, give me faith"? He's given you 3 or 4 times. So, yes, Baba's Vibhuti will cure you. It's got a divine grace that is inexplicable in nature. But it is also empowered with your faith. If you are absolutely new to Baba, we have seen these stories. Absolutely new. You don't know who he is. Somebody gives you and says, "This is Baba's Vibhuti, help, it will cure you." And you say, "Okay, I've tried everything, let me try this." And boom, it happens. It's not a matter of faith then. My sister was praying for a child for 11 years. Baba said, "Send this prasadam to her. To her, she will have a baby boy." And she is not a devotee. Nobody in my family was a devotee. She receives this prasad. She has it. And within a month, she conceives. What caused that? Is it her faith? Is it a prayer? Is it pure grace? Or is it a combination of all these? Does it really matter? As long as we don't close the door and say, "This is not going to work for me," then it is a problem. But if I open the door, keep my mind open, keep my heart open, yes, I will take this prasad, and if I'm meant to be cured, please God, make it happen and take it. Leave the rest to his will and allow the divinity to work its own miracle. So I think we open ourselves through faith. We invite the divine grace by opening our doors of our heart. Thank you.